your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we're joined by Dan Martin, a winner of five Grand Tour stages, two Monument Classics, two World Tour stage races and numerous other accolades. Now, cycling fans in the UK and especially fans of Irish cycling will be delighted to learn that Dan, who retired from racing at the end of last season, will be at every stage of this year's Brother UK sponsored Tour of Britain as an ambassador. Dan will ride out with guests before each stage and watch the final from the VIP area. Now, we're very lucky to have some of Dan's time this morning as he prepares to dash home to Andorra before returning for the start of this year's Tour of Britain in Aberdeen on Sunday, September the 4th. Dan, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Thanks for the invite.
Well, look, first of all, you're on the Isle of Wight. I'm in Dorset. I used to get dragged across to the Isle of Wight as a kid because my mum grew up there and my grandparents were there. But you're no stranger to the island too. What takes you there?
My wife is from the Isle of Wight, so we're over here visiting family, and it enabled me to check out the course for stage 8 of Tour of Britain. And it's quite funny, you're on stage 7, obviously, being in Dorset.
Absolutely, yeah, I'll be along at both stages. I cannot believe, Dan, that world-class cyclists are going to be riding, racing on my home roads. It's unbelievable. So great, you're joining us from the Isle of Wight, and clearly you'll be very familiar with the four climbs on that final stage of this year's Tour of Britain.
I mean, just as any stage of Tour of Britain, it says there's four climbs, but there's a lot more than four climbs. So it's, that's what makes Tour of Britain so difficult, because I think a lot of the riders really underestimate the course. They see flat roads, they see the lack of high altitude, but it really doesn't tell the full story. I mean, I remember the first stage in Cornwall last year, we had 3,500 meters climbing, which is equivalent almost to a Tour de France mountain stage, but the profile, you never go more than 300 meters above sea level. So it's really a very different challenge racing the Tour of Britain. But yeah, the Isle of Wight stage is going to be truly spectacular. And I think we're just in for an exciting race this year, because every stage has a different challenge.
What other challenges, Dan, do you think the World Tour riders might experience? You know, British roads, I should say, are notoriously heavy, not always in the best condition. Do you think that might give, you know, some of the home riders a bit more of an opportunity?
Well, I will say one of the biggest challenges facing anybody who hasn't raced in the UK is the dreaded cat eyes. I mean, many are crashed during Tour of Britain, especially when it's raining. Those cat eyes are very slippery, and obviously we don't have them in Europe on European roads, so it's a completely alien element. But all joking aside, I think the Tour of Britain is one of those races that the heavy roads just wears you down. And it's also one of the biggest total kilometers of racing during the season. 8 consecutive road stages, all on very difficult terrain. By the end of the week, you're extremely fatigued, and that's what makes it such good preparation. But one thing I have highlighted in my preparation for the race, obviously being a VIP host and having to ride every day, I've noticed the lack of rain the last few months in the UK. It's to be expected that we'll suffer some wet weather during the week. I've ridden editions of Tour of Britain when it's rained every single stage. So yeah, hopefully it's not that bad. I don't think it will dampen the spirits too much. But as far as the racing goes, that makes for an extra challenge.
When we think about Dan Martin and the Tour of Britain, immediately, of course, we think of Honest to Pass in 2013 and that duel with Nairo Quintana, which was conducted in absolutely the worst conditions. But my goodness, what a stage. And in a very interesting part of your career, Dan, you crashed out, I believe, of the Vuelta. The World Championships were at Florence that year. It was a course that could have suited you. And you came to the Tour of Britain and raced in a world-class field and on a super demanding course. And that's kind of become the Tour of Britain's calling card, hasn't it? It's that ultimate preparation for the World Championships. When you raced the Tour of Britain and you raced it 6 times, was it to prepare for other objectives, or was it to try and win the Tour of Britain?
Obviously, with my capacities as a rider, Tour of Britain wasn't really a race that suited me. So I always came here just to have fun, because obviously a lot of the pressures in the World Tour has always been about getting points, getting world ranking points. Tour of Britain being a lower ranked race, it meant the pressure was off, so I could really come into the race and just race aggressively without thinking. That's why the stage to Honister, I even went up to Nairo Quintana and said, let's just have some fun, let's attack. Because Ineos Sky, as they were called at the time, really had a stranglehold on the race and they were controlling it. And we were just a little bit bored. We knew it wasn't going to come anything, the attack, but we wanted to entertain. And that's what's so nice about the Tour of Britain as a race. When you have the big riders coming, they're willing to race to win and risk losing the race. They'll gamble because there isn't this high stakes that second or third or fourth is still a great result. Everybody's willing to risk a podium position to try and win the race. And that's what makes for great racing. But yeah, that year especially, I crashed out of the Vuelta with a concussion and just about managed to recover in time. So it really was a building block towards the end of season races. And obviously after Tour of Britain, I was feeling very good in Florence, again, in incredibly bad conditions. The rain was horrific that day. And I ended up crashing out of Florence as well, just on a slippery road. I can't actually remember what results I got at Lombardia, but I think I was up there. And then I got second in Beijing. Yeah, it really did set me up well for the end of the season, because most other races are just one day races. And it's really difficult to motivate yourself to put a really big block of training in once you get into this part of the season. So a lot of the World Tour riders come over to really, they're riding higher after the Tour de France, got a lot of kilometers in the legs already from the season. That's why you see last year, there was a big difference between the World Tour riders and the Continental riders. Once you get to this point in the year, there isn't a lot of training going on. You're just riding the crest of form that's built up throughout the season.
Do you think we might see a different race in a different field this year? Typically, as we mentioned, great preparation for the World Championships, and you've used this race for that purpose yourself. This year, the Worlds, of course, are in Australia. It's a long way away, and riders might want more than a week to acclimatise down under. Do you think we'll see a different field to the type of field we've seen in recent years when we've had superstars like, you know, Van Aert, Alaphilippe, Van der Poel? Could that lead to a more open race this year?
I do think it's going to be a more open race. I think we're going to see a lot of young riders coming to the event with something to prove. Although the person who wins this year, they're probably not going to be the big star that we saw winning last year in Wout van Aert, and obviously Julian Alaphilippe trying to win the race as well. But also when you have these super teams, these really strong riders in the race, it does tend to strangle the race a little bit and prevent other teams from being aggressive. With the World Championships in Australia this year, a lot of riders are choosing to go to Canada instead to lessen the jet lag and to go that way straight to Australia. So yeah, we might not see the favourites for the World Championships competing in Tour of Britain, but I think it can lead to a better, more exciting race, more open race, as you say. And also it gives opportunities to the British continental teams to really put their name out there, race aggressively, and maybe cause a surprise. I mean, I've already highlighted a couple of stages that I think can really suit the home riders. Also, I don't see many big, fast sprinter names on the start sheet. And we all know how fast, with all the criterium-based racing in the UK, how fast some of the British riders are. So I really think this could be the year that we see a win for one of the continental teams, which could be great for the home fans.
Wow, that would be absolutely incredible. Dan, I wanted to ask how the race has changed over the years and over the years of your participation. You're a great person to ask this question. You made your debut in 2008 and almost finished on the podium, and your last participation was as recently as last year. How has the race changed in your opinion?
One thing that hasn't changed is the people on the side of the road. One thing the Tour of Britain is renowned for across the European peloton is the crowds. I mean, the atmosphere you get, the welcome you get. Yeah, it's just astonishing. That's why I wanted to keep coming back, because you feel this support when you're racing on the continent. And it feels like you're giving back a little bit. There's something coming to race on the home road. And also because of the lack of pressure that I talked about before, the riders can really afford to give a little bit more time back to the fans that you can't actually give when you're racing the Tour de France or whatnot. But yeah, the race has just become more professional. I think the organization have really stepped up the last few years. And they're learning what type of roads lead to the best racing, most competitive courses, and safety as well. I mean, the peloton's changed. How it races has changed. And Sweet Spot as an organization have really managed to go with that and understand the racing has changed in their course design. And hopefully that's obviously a role that I would like to help them with in the future as well, to make the racing roads as competitive as possible. We saw a fantastic stage last year to the Angel of the North. On paper, it didn't look like much, but the roads just lended themselves to great racing. And that's what we're fortunate to have in the UK. We have these roads that really encourage an attacking style of racing. Obviously, with Robin Carpenter as well winning the stage, Bunch simply couldn't catch him on the technical, narrow little roads. It's days like that that really show where this race is going. And that's why I think we're going to see a very open race this year that's hopefully less controlled and a few less bunch sprints, because obviously that's the type of racing that I've never been a big fan of myself.
Well, it's hard to imagine a better consultant for Sweet Spot, Dan, if they involve you in future editions. Absolutely amazing to get your insights and your input. I mean, isn't this year's course a course with Dan Martin written all over it? And are you sorry not to be racing this year? A hilltop finish on the opening and the closing stages, a brutally hard day in Yorkshire. This has your name on it, doesn't it?
Unfortunately, this was supposed to be the 2021 race. Ironically, it would have been my last race as a professional or one of my last races on the Isle of Wight, my adopted UK home. But it just means I can really enjoy the race this year. It's also giving something extra to the people who I'm going to be riding with. And I'm hoping I'll escape the VIP area sometimes and come say hello to everybody at the finish line, you know. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to being able to go to a race like this and not have to concentrate on recovery and the actual part of competition and be able to talk to people. Obviously, it's been an exciting year since I retired. I'm just finishing off my book today, actually. I think it's the final day I can make any changes. That's launching in a couple of weeks and all the business things going on. It's been a very busy year, but being back at a bike race, it's going to be the first time I've really been back at the side of the road, except for the couple of days I did at the Tour de France. So it's going to be great to be back among the guys in the peloton and catch up with friends and yeah, be a real part of the race. It's one of the races that I really miss as a rider, but I'm sure if it's pouring rain every day, I'm going to be quite happy, although I still need to ride, obviously. It is going to be nice to be on the other side of the fence if it's pouring rain.
I wanted to ask very briefly about retirement and about the book. The book is Chased by Pandas, My Life in the Mysterious World of Cycling, which is on sale from October the 13th. Retirement, Dan, you seem to have been making really easy work of it. It's a difficult phase, isn't it, in the life of a professional athlete, but you seem to have made light work of it. How much of that is the fact that it was a choice for you, that you went out at the top, you won a Grand Tour stage in your final season, and you've chosen to retire rather than not being able to find a contract?
I was very fortunate to be in that situation. And this is also something that I prepared for over a number of years. I began an investment business, Rubik's Ventures, 3 years ago with the idea that obviously I would have something to turn to, something to go to, something that I enjoyed doing post-retirement. And I'm committing a little bit more time to that now, obviously, now that I have retired. I've always said that I didn't want to keep going if I didn't enjoy it. And cycling for me has always been social. It's always been about having fun on the bike. And I was determined to stop before the enjoyment got sucked out of it. And that's what I did. That's why I kept that promise to myself. I realized that, wait a minute, I'm not actually enjoying this anymore. The sacrifice that you need to make, the sport has become so intense that the sacrifice you need to make to be competitive, it just become too extreme. And it's fine when you're a young guy and you don't have a family and you're hungry, you want to go and spend 200 days a year living at altitude away from home and training hard every day. But I was missing out on too much in the end. And that's great when you're enjoying it and when you're really racing at the front. But it got to a point where I felt that the things that I was missing out on in life were too important for the sacrifice. Don't get me wrong, I loved every minute of my career, but the most important thing to me is I still love riding my bike now. And that's what I know so many professionals who, the moment they take their numbers off, they stop riding. And I didn't want that to happen. I wanted to be able to really love going out on my bike, love going out with my mates on the bikes. That's how I started riding, and that's how I want to keep riding for the rest of my life. So yeah, I'm really content in retirement. I still miss racing every now and again, but the difference is that I miss racing from 5-6 years ago, I think, when it was just a little bit more relax. I think you can see the intensity of the peloton now. It's become so professional. You have to be on top of your game every kilometer of the race. There isn't any moment when you can sit back and go and have a chat with your mates. Whereas what we used to do 10 years ago, obviously the peloton would cruise along. You'd have a bit of a talk, then you'd have a race at the end, and it was a lot more relaxed. Whereas now, professionalism of the whole peloton has stepped up. At a certain point, I just realized, you know what? I want to go off and I'm bored of this. That's the thing. I became bored. I needed to just a change in my life to refresh. And I'm incredibly happy with my decision, content. And I'm struggling now to realize how I ever found time to train because life's so busy.
Well, fascinating insight there, Dan. And I'm sure the book will be absolutely filled with them. That's Chased by Pandas, My Life in the Mysterious World of Cycling, available from October the 13th, 2022. It's wonderful to hear, Dan, that you've retired from racing and not from cycling. I'm sure the British public will be delighted to meet you at the Tour of Britain this year, which starts, of course, on September the 4th in Aberdeen. It's been a wonderful career, Dan. It's been a privilege to watch it from this side of the barriers. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Very much appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.